Hey folks, welcome back to the Nothing To Do With You podcast with me, your host, Clodagh. As always, I say this is a safe space where we can be ourselves, we can laugh, we can cry, we can give out, we can curse, because I am known to drop the odd F-bomb. Although I mightn't in this one as much, we'll see, I could get in a bit of trouble. But yes, this podcast is all about leaving your stigma at the door and feeling comfortable talking and telling stories about real life and real things that go on and happen, and just, as I say, giving whispers of voice. So just to fill you in a little bit with myself, I'm officially 40. I'm loving it so far. There is just a new level of not giving a crap, not sweating the small stuff, appreciating the little things, and I feel like I'm that little bit wiser. So hopefully this is the start of a really awesome decade. So for this episode, a lot of you guys might realize I am a practicing Catholic. I'm practicing probably now coming on four years after spending a lot of years. I don't want to say with my back turned to the church because I always prayed, but I certainly wasn't a mass goer. I certainly didn't talk to God like I do now. I did believe, but I wasn't a good Catholic. which I suppose leads me on to introducing my guest for this week's episode. I'm delighted to be joined by Father David Vard. Father David is originally from Newbridge and he's currently a priest in Stradbally, which I guess makes him the EP priest. David, how are you doing?
I'm good, Clodagh. How are you?
Great. I'm delighted to have you on.
It's great to be here. A belated happy birthday.
Thank you very much. You have a little bit to go before you catch up on me.
Not that much, but a little bit.
So I suppose, for a bit of background, myself and David, by the way, I've already cleared it with him. He's okay when we call him David, aren't you?
Absolutely. It's my name.
Myself and David, our paths crossed earlier this year while we were doing a top secret project in Dublin.
We can't. We actually can't. No, we're not allowed.
We signed them bloody things, didn't we? Yeah. We met anyway at a project in Dublin. And I believe our paths crossed completely for a reason. And it was funny because he was one of the first people I met that day. And initially, I was a little bit apprehensive because you all know Chloe and her anxiety. But within a couple of minutes of actually talking to David, without even knowing he was a priest, I felt so calm and was able to enjoy the whole experience. So he definitely played a part in that, whether he realizes that or not. So, David, look, you know my podcast is called Nothing to Do With You. So it's a funny one because I hate saying it in so many ways, but I know my reaction that I get from people sometimes when I say I'm a practicing Catholic, they're like, really? Like I just said, I farted. It can be a bit strange. And it is funny because good old Ireland, Catholic Ireland, where once upon a time it probably would have been taboo to not say you are a practicing Catholic. It's amazing how the tables have turned in some ways sometimes, you know. So I suppose, look, you're 32. You're a young man. Tell me, how did you become a priest? Your faith? Tell me your story.
Well, I think like anyone my age, I was brought up Catholic. Baptized, first communion, confirmation. I was brought up in the Church of Scandal, almost For a while there, like almost every news article about the church was always about the latest scandal or the latest, you know, bad thing that's come out of the church.
Yeah.
So I grew up in that church. I grew up in that era of scandal, and the scandals just kept getting worse and worse. So after confirmation, I said, listen, I'm done. Thank you very much. Don't want any more to do with this.
Even that young.
Oh, yeah. And like looking back, you know, I'm not proud of it now, but I think Holy Communion and confirmation was just to get the envelopes and the cards and, you know, the celebration.
I think kids can be forgiven for that, though.
I hope so. It was almost like, you know, faith was something that you learned in school that you had to do. You did the Alive O program. You learned the songs. The songs were great. And you went down to the church every now and then. The priest came into the classroom, but it was nothing. There was nothing personal to me about it. Nothing that I wanted to explore more.
Mm.
And it was never talked about at home either. You know, my mother would have loved us, I think, to have gone to Mass. And the few times, you know, that she attempted to bring us to Mass, I think it was just too much for her. We would have gone at Christmas and stuff like that. My sisters would have sang in the choir. Again, I don't think any big faith thing for them. They just like to sing. And so we went to Christmas, but my mother would have to bribe me to go at Christmas. You know, I'll give you an early Christmas present if you come.
Go away.
Yeah. So then I left the church. I was one of those teenagers that, you know, called all the priests bad names and said that church is, oh God, you know, it's dreadful, awful. I want nothing to do with it. But then I went and I did transition year. And I was an exceptionally shy teenager, like a crippling shy teenager. And I remember transition year was going to be a big thing for me because we did a lot of, you know, we would have made little movies every week. We had to do a lot of things that were out there for me.
Extracurricular, you know,
a lot of extracurricular. So the basics of me hiding in the Irish class was all gone. I never wanted to stick my head above the parapet. But so I think second week in transition year, things were not going well for me. And the year head came to me and said, you know, David, and he's a very direct man. And he said, David, it's like this. If you don't apply yourself, if you don't get involved in this, we're kicking you out. So I said, right, okay, David, you have two options here. You can say thanks very much and go on to fifth year, or you can apply yourself and get involved. So I did. And I said, listen, anything that comes my way, I'm going to say yes to. So I did. So I said yes to everything. And it was the best year of my life.
Did it feel good to make that decision in your head to go, do you know what, I'm going to do a flip around here and say yes to everything?
Yeah. I don't think it did feel good. I don't think it was such a big thing. I hate failure more than anything.
I hear you.
So to go home and say to my mom, they're kicking me out of TY, would have been a huge failure.
A big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I said yes. And I said, you know, I kept saying yes. And that, you know, involved making these little movies every week.
Hmm.
It involved, I went to an all-boys school and, you know, we had to play the part of male and female in the little movies and involved a lot of that. And involved a mini company, setting up a mini company that was quite successful and going off to national competitions and presenting in front of big auditoriums about this mini company.
Wow, you really got action-packed.
Yeah, yeah. I jumped out of a plane towards the end of the year.
No, you did not.
I did, yeah, I did. But the biggest test, going back to faith, the biggest test was in around March or April of the year. The principal came to my classroom. I was doing art at the time. And he said, you know, can I speak to David Vard? I was like, well, what did I do? Because doing all these extracurricular stuff, I wasn't very good at going to class. I was always doing something else. And he says, David, I want you to go to Lourdes. You know, the parish have come to me and they want two young men to go to Lourdes.
Okay. You know,
I think you and another lad would be perfect for it.
Another guy from your year.
Another guy from my year, yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, where is Lourdes? I don't know what Lourdes is, sir. It was that we were going with the parish. It's a place of pilgrimage and you're going to be pushing wheelchairs, helping out a lot of sick people go to Lourdes, just helping out whenever you can. You know, you're representing the school, representing your parish. So we're asking you to do this. And like, I don't really want to do that, you know?
Really?
And I can remember, I think I texted my mom, because this is before smartphones, and saying, you know, they want me to go to Lourdes. And my mom texts back, you're going, you know? And I was like, I don't really want to go, you know? But I went.
Was it the religious part? Was it what you had to do? Was it all of it?
It was the religious part.
Okay.
And also the leaving home part.
Yeah, I know that.
I was only 16. I had no desire to go. I had no desire to be on pilgrimage. I didn't really know what a pilgrimage was. I just knew it had religious connotations and I didn't want to do it.
Okay.
But my mother said I had to. And the principal kind of said, you have to. So I did. I can remember leading up to it, my parish priest, Father Joe, invited myself and the other young fella to come to his house with our parents. So our two mothers went. And our mothers were friendly anyway. So we all knew each other. But this is the first time I'd seen this man from a distance, but I'd never actually spoken to him. This is my first time to be in a priest's house, my first time. You know, and he was just telling us, you know, this is what's expected of them. Don't worry, your sons will be safe. They're going to be X, Y, and Z, all the safeguarding stuff. And, you know, be here at 4 o'clock on whatever day you start from that moment. Put bags on the bus. Help out in the airport, you know.
Yeah.
Do all that. So I was kind of like, right, okay, let's go. Let's do this, whatever. You know, I'm not going for any reasons. But just to go, because I'm told.
Do you mind me asking, after meeting him, so you were like chatting to a priest?
Yeah.
Were you kind of like, okay, priests aren't these?
Not really, because then because my mother was there, it still kind of felt very formal.
Okay, fair enough.
But when I got talking to him in Lourdes, sitting outside the hotel, you know, you'd be sitting down having a Coke or having, I don't think I drank coffee at the time, whatever. And he'd come over and say, well, how are you getting on? You know, you're doing great work. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing. You know, how are you finding Lourdes? And just having a conversation with him.
Checking in.
Yeah. And it became very normal. And we always called him Father Joe, but, you know, Father Joe wasn't this big, mean parish priest that I thought he was. He was actually a very nice man. And, you know, one time in Lourdes, at one point, I decided, okay, you know, let's take down the walls here, the barriers. You know, we're going to Mass every day. We're doing all these religious services. You know, maybe enter into it a bit more, you know? So we did. And what I did love, I think from the moment we did it, every night we gathered. I don't know if you've ever been to Lourdes.
I haven't.
There's a big river by the grotto. So we gathered across the river looking at the grotto at nighttime. And it's beautifully lit up. And there's pilgrims from all over the world and they're all speaking their own language. We used to pray a rosary across the grotto, looking at the grotto, beautifully lit up. I never prayed the rosary in my life. I don't think I even knew what a rosary was.
Wow.
But I found that moment very, very peaceful, and just beautiful. Even just to look at, it was beautiful to be part of. So that was coming. Anyway, getting talking to this parish priest, open myself up a bit more to faith, not being so closed off, talking with the other young people, because there was myself and this other lad from my school, there was another girl from a different school, and there was a young carer who had come. She used to work in the convent in Newbridge, and she was there, and we were all chatting and talking, and Father Joe was there, and we're asking him questions like, you know, why did you become a priest? You know, how much money do you make? Do you ever have a girlfriend?
Curiosity.
Yeah, you know, things that people ask me now, things that you're probably going to ask me.
Of course.
But, and like he answered very honestly, you know, and I was very taken by his honesty because I don't think I'd ever seen a priest. I don't think I ever wanted to see a priest being that honest and being human.
Or even thought it was possible, maybe.
Exactly. And I don't think I had the language now to say what I was feeling. But you know, he was very impressive to me as a man and then as a priest. And I remember walking away from that conversation, which he says he can't recall. So obviously this is a conversation that he had many times with many people. But
I love that thinking, you came away.
I so came away profound. Saying, yeah.
New phone, like, who this?
Yeah. Which is funny because that happens to me too. But
we'll get to that.
Yeah. So I just came around thinking, God, you know, David, you could be a priest. You know, like, you're an ordinary fella. He's an ordinary fella. Like, I just thought it had to be that you had to be something extraordinary and have an extraordinary experience and hear the voice of God and pluck you up from your obscurity and, you know, but it was just, anyway, that thought quickly left my head.
Did it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like, I don't want to be a priest. You know, he's a nice guy.
It's amazing that it did come into your head though, at 16.
Yeah.
You know, to say, could I be a priest?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just clearly remember saying, oh, God, I could be a priest. But that stage, I had no faith, you know.
Yeah.
I was being open to faith. And also what was very impressive in Lourdes was the people there. You know, the people from my own parish, but also the people from all over the world. We're bringing sick people. We're bringing young people. We're bringing themselves. We're going themselves for whatever reason. You know, they wanted to go to this religious place, to partake in the story, to listen to all that was going on there, to search for their own miracle.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was very impressive to me. And they were very, very nice people. So this big, bad Catholic church that I had
built
formed
up
in my head or had been formed for me was kind of crumbling around me.
So it wasn't that like doom, gloom, complete Old Testament. You know,
or even
God, fear the God, fear the church. It was
fear
like,
the
oh,
priest.
These are actually humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just doing their best and have this extraordinary faith in this place called Lourdes, in this God who they know, they seem to know and love, and Mary
get a
and
peace
Jesus.
From this.
Yeah. And they get something from it. And I was like, God, you know, I want that.
So when you came back from Lourdes, did you feel like, right, I'm going to be a practicing Catholic now? Or was it a gradual thing?
I was open to it.
Okay.
You know, I'd kind of, because, you know, sometimes I tell this story and I give the Cliff Notes version of it. And everyone's like, so you came back, so you went as an atheist and came back as wanting to be a priest. I'm like, no, that's not what happened. I came back being open to it. Father Joe on the pilgrimage invited the young people who were on the pilgrimage to come again to his house.
Okay. You know,
together. Bring a friend, he said. Bring two friends. I managed to bring one friend with me. Couldn't find two. And we continued the conversation that we were having in Lourdes. And then also, the very same time that we were in Lourdes, there was a gathering of young people from all over the world happening in Australia, called World Youth Day. And every couple of years, 3 or 4 years, the Pope goes to a city, one city in the world. This was in Sydney, and millions of young people from all over the world gather. So people from Newbridge Parish had gone to that. So Father Joe invited them to come along too.
Tell you the story.
Just to you know, have a chat. You know, that's all. You know, talk about faith. Talk about faith. Like, this was in 2008. So, you know, what does faith mean to you in 2008? What's going on for you? So we did. And we met and we kept meeting. I think originally we may have met once a month or something, or maybe once every 2 weeks. He then invited us to tell about our experience at World Youth Day or Lourdes at Mass.
He said,
people at Mass would love to hear about young people and faith and, you know, your experience. So I did that. And we kept meeting. And we kind of formed a little youth group. And
in Newbridge.
In Newbridge, we just called ourselves Newbridge Parish Youth Group.
More
young people came along. We met every Thursday night and we talked about faith. We talked about life. We had a few games. We used to go to McDonald's and, you know, it was a lovely little community to explore my faith with. And then I started to go back to Mass every Sunday.
Okay.
I used to go to Mass with my mother. My mother was delighted. And I suppose during that first year after Lourdes, that voice came into my head, you know, priesthood. It just kept getting louder and louder. And I was getting to know Father Joe. I was getting to know the other priests of the parish. And they were lovely men, ordinary men, and getting very friendly with them. And apparently I was asking all the right questions to them. You know, what's it like being a priest? And they could see something going on inside of me as well. And also that year, a seminarian came to the parish. So a seminarian is someone studying for the priesthood.
Okay. So
he happened to be coming to Newbridge to live in Newbridge for that year and to work in the parish. So he became part of the youth group as well. And he's only a couple
like
years older than me.
Like an apprentice priest for all the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was only a couple of years older than me. So, like, you know, you could say looking back then that God put all these things in my life for a reason. And he did, I think. You know, I think all these signs were pointing me towards this direction. So yeah, all that year, kind of this voice got louder and louder. My faith started getting deeper and deeper. And Easter of fifth year, I decided to go and tell someone. So I went to the local priest, not Father Joe, one of the younger priests, who happened to be the vocations director of the diocese.
Okay.
So his job was to recruit and to promote. And I told him, and he said, yeah, we could see it in you. We kind of thought this might be the case, and he was delighted. I thought he was going to say, go away from me, you know, you can't do this, you know, you're being stupid. I don't know, because I'm just so new, back to the faith, so new, you know.
Yeah.
Young as well, but he didn't.
And so you're what, 17 in fifth year?
17, yeah.
And you're saying, right.
I'm thinking
this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So I suppose a couple of questions. Your peers, your friendship groups, did they know you had a faith? Did they know you were a practicing Catholic?
Oh, yeah. So, like, I had friends in the youth group.
You had no problem saying that.
Yeah. No, I had friends in the youth group, and we were all on that faith buzz.
Okay.
And then I had friends who weren't in the youth group who were, you know, very respectful. You know, I had one friend who was a...
I love to hear that.
One friend born-again Christian. So we were kind of joking, you know, you come to my mass, I'll go to your service, and we'll try to, you know, convert each other. But yeah, very respectful. They had no problem. You know, David goes to mass
on
Sunday.
So you weren't getting any negative,
brilliant. Yeah, I suppose every now and then there might be the joke, and they might say, you know, sorry, Vard. But no, there was never any, my closest friends, there was never any pushback or never any...
I love that, because that means that you were surrounded by a good circle and good people.
Mm. And I still have that circle.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're still my closest friends.
Those types of friendships you could never put a price on.
No.
Never.
No. It's a friendship that you can pick up the phone to and, you know, tell anything to it, no matter the last time you spoke to them.
It's funny even you saying that. I was sitting with my group of friends at my 40th dinner there a couple of weeks ago, and just something really small, I just looked around at them all, and everyone's different, and I suppose some of them are only meeting for the first time. I was the connection, and I was just saying, I trust every one of these girls to be my champion in my absence. And that is something I've found, particularly in the last couple of years, is very important to me. And I do the same to them. And also, okay, we all have different, like you said, born again Christian, one is Greek Orthodox, there's a couple of that would be just spiritual, but our core values are the same. And there's no problem with me saying, I go to mass, I go to this, you know, I don't feel that like I'm not allowed to say it, like, you know, in front of them. So I think that's really important to have good people in your corner. It means a lot. But getting back to 17-year-old David, I have to ask, because everyone's going to want to know, was it coming into your head about, like, girlfriends, dating, marriage, kids?
Yeah.
Because would you really be thinking of that at 17?
Yeah, I don't think so much the marriage, the kids was coming into my head. I think it was the girlfriends.
Yeah.
So I had a girlfriend in my fifth year.
Yeah.
We broke up, obviously.
If you said we're still together, that would be a whole other different taboo.
That would be taboo. I mean, in as far as much as that does come into your head in a serious way, it did, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But it's not as if I went to that priest that day and said, I want to become a priest, or I'm thinking about becoming a priest, and then that was it. I had to sign on the dotted line.
Okay.
You know, we had a lot more. We used to meet very regularly, talk about it. We had a lot more discussions. And he asked me too. He was saying, David, you know, if you're doing this, even as you're training, you know, there's no girlfriends. There's no... And if that does happen for you, and if you do fall in love, every blessing to you, but, you know, you have to make a choice.
You have to leave. Yeah.
Or you make a choice. You know, you can't have both.
Yeah.
But the desire in my heart, and I do describe it as falling in love, you know, falling in love with faith, falling in love with this idea of priesthood, not instantly, but gradually. And that desire was so strong that I think it overcame the other.
The type of having a relationship with somebody else.
Yeah. And I was told very early on, like, there's going to be years of training, years of saying that you can leave and that you don't want to do this anymore.
So it wasn't like you was going to be, you train for six months and bang, that's it.
Yeah, no.
It's a long process.
Yeah, like, it took me 7 years.
Yeah.
But 6 years before you make any promises. So,
okay.
So I always knew that, and I always knew I had the opportunity to leave, or to even, I think 2 weeks before I was due to go to seminary, I pulled out. You know what? For various reasons, I said, this is not the right time.
Okay.
And the priest said, okay, if that's how you feel, there's no brother, but will you come up to Dublin with me? I want to go to confession, and, you know, we'll just go for maybe a cup of tea and, you know, go for, you know, have a walk around. So I did. And what he never said anything to me. He never tried to convince me to go. But I suppose he gave me time, and he allowed me the opportunity to reflect a little bit.
I respect that.
Yeah. And I do too. And I did. I did go to the seminary that year.
So you did end up going in that year?
I did, yeah. 22nd of August.
So was this, you did your leaving cert, I presume?
Did my leaving cert. I had to get points. I had to get points to do an arts degree in Maynooth.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which wasn't easy enough because 16-year-old David, who didn't want to become a priest, had already selected his subjects for fifth year.
Oh, okay.
To go to an NUI, you need an international language, a European language.
Oh.
And 16-year-old David didn't want to go to an NUI. He wanted to go to Trinity and study history. And so in the middle of my sixth year, I had to take up French. Yes, just so I can get to NUI.
Go away.
Yeah. So my French is not good.
I was like, do you want to continue this in French?
No. all I had to do was pass okay. French. Just to say that I had the international language. So I did.
Right.
But yeah, I got the points. But like the week I entered, I had my debs on a Monday. I had my leaving cert results on a Wednesday. And I went to seminary on Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah.
So straight in.
Straight in, 22nd of August. You know, I was so naive going in, but I think that's the best. I think it was best I was so naive. I arrived up in ripped jeans, Converse, and a hoodie. And I can remember.
I love that.
Yeah. But, you know, that was me. That's what I wore. You know?
Yeah.
I always had Converse. Rocked up. And I just remember the priest in the entrance. They're like, please don't be him. And I was like, hi, I'm David Varad. And they're like, oh, it is him. I think they were hoping I was like, you know, the brother of someone.
Looking for directions.
Yeah, and then like others were arriving in full suits.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, full suits and tie. And I was like, oh, God, I don't even have a suit. I had a suit from the Debs. You know, I bought a suit there. And cords. I remember one fellow wearing cords. I was like, oh, cords. I can't wear cords. And or like just.
But I love that. I love that you showed up authentically. You.
Yeah. I didn't know any other.
And was there many of you gone? Like
15.
Okay.
14. Yeah, 15. I think. 14. Sorry, that was 14.
That was 14. That was 14 guys going in to study to become priests.
Yeah, I was the youngest, and were there were three. Yeah, I was 18. There was three others at 21.
Okay.
Fella in his 30s. A couple of fellas in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and one fella who was 64.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
All very different. North, south, east, west. Some lads I couldn't understand. That day was very emotional. You know, I was leaving home.
Yeah.
We didn't really know what was going to go, like what was happening. I remember going up to see my bedroom for the first time and looking out this big, huge, enormous window. And I turned around and my mother had already made my bed. she just wanted to keep busy and, you know, just settling in and working things out and saying goodbye then. And
was it hard for your mom?
Oh, yeah.
Or probably bittersweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she bawled.
Yeah. Irish mammies.
Yeah. And again, we didn't know. We didn't know really. I think everyone in my family was naive at the time. And I just went upstairs afterwards saying goodbye to my mother. And I didn't know that we were meant to gather for night prayer. I didn't know what night prayer was. Okay. I didn't know there was a whole social evening planned for us. I went to bed.
No one came and found you.
Well, later that morning, someone came up to me. One of the second years was there. They were welcoming the first years. He said, again, he had a real thick Northern Ireland accent. And I think I got a couple of words. He said, you know, you went missing last night and we couldn't find you. Oh, I just went to bed. And he goes, oh yeah, we know the priest in charge of you went up to your bedroom and, you know, because we thought you'd
just
run
to double
away.
Double check you weren't escaping on the first night.
Yeah, we thought they full on thought I'd run away.
Go so, away.
Yeah. So that was.
Well, anyway, I suppose. If there was going to be a night to do it, it'd be night one, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But you know what? From the moment I went in, I always felt very, very comfortable there.
And did it feel like college life? Did it feel like?
It didn't. It didn't. So we were there a full month before I began my arts degree.
Oh, okay.
Like, and even it was funny because, you know, Freshers Week. You know, the week that all the freshers and they come up and they start joining, you know, and they have a bit of a laugh and they, you know, I was on retreat for that week, so I couldn't enjoy any of that. But then when I went over, so I did all my study over in the North Campus with all the other lay students. No one knew. I was just one student in history. I did history and philosophy and sociology.
Wow. And
there could be up to 300-400 pupils in a history class.
Okay.
So they didn't know. I had friends from Newbridge who went to Maynooth, you know, because...
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's not so far away. So it was great to see them and to connect with them. So yeah, like nobody knew. Nobody knew over in the North Campus. And then I'd come back to the South Campus where I lived and I prayed and I ate and I had my seminary friends and we had seminary classes and I had a few things to do there. But it was kind of...
Yeah.
It was unusual. It was.
So you were kind of getting the best of both worlds in a strange way.
Yeah. I didn't have the typical, you know, I couldn't do rag week. I couldn't go out to the parties.
I was going to ask, had you any freedom to do things like that? Like, could you go down to the pole?
We could, but we had curfews.
Okay.
So you had curfews. The gates would lock, so we have to be back.
You didn't want to be on the wrong side of that gate.
Yeah, and if the security had to come open the gate, we had to sign in our name. And yeah, there is a story there, but I'm not going to tell it.
Yeah, you're talking like a lad who had to sign in.
In my second year, I did, and I thought it was very funny to sign a name. And I was not funny. I was not funny. Anyway,
When we're finished recording?
I got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, tell me after.
Yeah. It's too taboo.
Nothing too taboo for me. So this was David's college life for how many years?
Seven.
Yeah. So this was seminary. This was studying.
Yeah. So I did 3 years the arts degree, graduated, went back then and did a theology degree, Bachelor of Divinity, it's called, which takes 3 years.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. I have a Bachelor of Divinity.
Oh my God, I like that.
Yeah, it's on my wall over there.
There's instant peace with that.
Yeah, a lot of hard work to get it.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
But during...
You had to put the head down for this.
Yeah. And there's no guarantees because, the church is crying out for priests. Of course they're going to pass you. Of course they're going to... No. Yeah. You had to work hard and you had to... A lot of essays, a lot of exams, a lot of writing. And then you had, on top of all your studies, you might have had to do seminary studies, a lot of self-reflection, a lot of writing.
Wow.
You had to meet with a spiritual director once a month. After a while, you had to meet with a human growth counselor once a week. Then you had to meet with your own formation director as well to discuss all that's going on for you.
So there was a lot of care. Support.
Yeah, a lot of support.
And checking in and how you're doing and how you're feeling and so, with your progression in it.
Yeah, and sometimes you almost felt like, okay, if you just left me alone for a few minutes, I could get on with it. But looking back, it sets you up for your life as a priest as best as you can, because I don't think there's anything could quite prepare you really for being a priest. So during my Bachelor of Divinity, you took a year out from it. So after your first year of that, you take a year out. And you
what
do
does a year out mean?
So you do, instead of doing your study for your degree, you do a study for a higher diploma in pastoral theology.
Okay.
So that's 2 days a week in Maynooth and the rest of the time in a parish. Remember that seminarian came to Newbridge?
Yeah, the apprentice.
He was doing that year. So I did that year then.
Where did you go?
I went to Gray Cullen in... Leash.
Oops.
Yeah. It's right on the border. It's right on the border, but Gray Cullen is in Leash. Yeah.
Okay. So two days studying, and then the other days you were actually living in Gray Cullen.
Yeah, I was living in a parish, working in a parish, being an apprentice priest, kind of going around with the parish priest, who happened to be the priest who confirmed me. He was in Newbridge when I was a child, yeah. And he had no recollection of me, and I said, I don't blame you. We did that for 6 months, September to Easter, and then we spent 12 weeks in a hospital. So we had to do intense training in a hospital for 12 weeks, and I was down in Cork.
What do you mean now?
So kind of like an apprentice chaplain? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would have seen people dying and very sick, I presume.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I was even in surgeries. I had the great blessing of being at a birth. Which was really, really special. And I got a lot of good experience down there. But also, in the hospital, we did a thing called CP, which is clinical pastoral education. So we had time on the wards. Then we also did a lot of time self-reflecting, writing, reading, almost. But we had to do CPE to get our higher diploma as well. So that was a very intense year. Very, very intense year.
It sounds it. I don't know why, but I'll be honest, in my head, going into the priesthood to study for the six, seven years, you're just studying away in a new parish that you've never been before. No. Like you said, an apprenticeship, going to a hospital, seeing probably some tough times as well as lovely times. Like that's a lot of mental and physical.
There's a lot of processing and pressure.
And you were young.
Yeah, in the hospital, I was 22, 23. Yeah.
I think sometimes people forget the roles that, now I'm probably jumping ahead a bit, but I think people sometimes forget the roles that priests play in society, that you're not just at the podium on a Sunday and a Saturday. There's a lot there. But look, we'll come back to that. Yes. I want to get to David getting ordained and all of that.
So before you're ordained a priest, you're ordained a deacon. So a deacon, there's two types of deacon. You can be a transitional deacon, which is what I was. I was going to be a priest. Or you can be a permanent deacon. So a deacon who doesn't become a priest is always a deacon, and they can be married. And so we have permanent deacons now in my diocese and a lot of dioceses around Ireland. Married men who can assist at the altar, can baptize babies.
I was just going to ask.
Yeah, baptize babies. And they can do weddings. They can't say mass. They can't hear confession. They can't do last rites. But they
can say mass. They can assist.
They can assist at the altar, like a...
At the altar.
They can read the gospel.
And what did you say?
They can't do confession and they can't do last rites. But they can baptize and they can marry.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was a deacon for a year, and that's when we make our promises of celibacy and of obedience, which is our two big promises. So we do that at diaconate. So then my last year in Maynooth was as a deacon. So I was in Maynooth Monday to Friday and then in a parish at the weekend.
The same parish every weekend?
Yeah, I was in Naas the weekend.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is great.
So you were kind of close. Yeah.
Yeah, because Newbridge and Maynooth, there's not much, there's only 40 minutes max between the two, and then Naas was kind of halfway in between anyway. So it was great.
Had you this vision of being sent off, you know, where you mightn't see your family for months on end or things like that?
No, because I always knew I was going for my diocese, and my diocese was Kildare and Loughlin. So I always knew that I was going to be based near enough to home, you know.
Did you get comfort from that?
Yeah, and like especially like when I learned how to drive, I could get up and go myself, and that took a lot of pressure off as well.
Of course.
But yeah, so that was my last
12 months a deacon.
12 months a deacon. And then on the 25th of June, 2017, I was ordained a priest.
Wow. How did that day feel?
A blur, you know, a real blur. I remember because I was the last to be ordained of like my class. So the weeks leading up to it, every weekend I was at an ordination.
Of
friends and family and stuff. And
yeah.
And because I did 7 years, a lot of my class only did 6 years. So the previous summer I was at a lot of ordinations. And you make friends with people up the years and you go to a lot of ordinations. But I don't think anything prepares you for actually being the one ordained.
I'd say so.
It was a great day. It really was a
great
day.
And you were 25.
25, yeah.
Would you have been the youngest priest?
Yeah.
That
became the bishop, my bishop, Bishop Dennis, in his homily, you know, he announced that I was the youngest priest in Ireland. And I think he announced that kind of like off the, you know, no one was meant to focus on it. But a lot of people did.
Yeah.
A lot of media picked up on it for some reason. And
wow.
Yeah, I became, that was my title, the youngest priest in Ireland.
And for a long time. Did people, or was media approaching you then?
Yeah. I had a lot of offers.
Was it?
I did some of it. A lot of the radio stuff I did.
Yeah.
I turned down all the TV stuff. I wasn't ready to do that.
I
was brand new.
Right, I'm a priest.
I was brand new, you know.
Let me get settled here, folks.
Slow the roll.
And did you know where you were going?
Yes. I was told where I was going. It was funny because the bishop texts me my last week in Maynooth and says, David, can I meet you on the 30th of May, which is going to be a Monday? And I was leaving Maynooth on that Sunday.
Right.
So I text back, Bishop, I'm leaving Maynooth on Sunday. I won't be back on Monday.
I
was done after 7 years. So he was like, oh, okay. So he arranged to meet me back in Carlow where he lives on the Wednesday. And I was told, yeah, you're going to Portlaoise. Best of luck.
Were you delighted?
Yeah. I'd been in Portlaoise for 2 weeks as a student one summer, so I knew a little bit about the place.
Okay.
Not that far from home either, so it's grand.
Exactly. Yeah. What a big town.
Big town. I kind of didn't realize just how big it was, and which was good for me because I'm from a big town. I like being in a big town.
Yeah. And then because you're the newbie, are you under priests, I presume?
Yeah, so in Port Leash, when I first arrived, there was the Monsignor, who was the parish priest. There was another curate, Father Paddy, who happened to be my school chaplain as well when I was in secondary school.
All the connections. Yeah. Did he remember you at least?
No. And then there was two older men who were kind of semi-retired, but they were fantastic as well. So I was someone once called me the junior B priest, you know.
Love that.
Yeah, kind of, you know, is there, turns up if you really want him, but don't be asking him for much. He's only new. He's not very good.
Yeah, because you don't want massive pressure on you when you're finding yourself and finding what kind of priest am I going to be, what way am I going with this?
Even doing my first weddings and my first baptisms and trying to do everything right and also inject a little bit of my personality without being about me, and you know, it was all a huge learning.
It's like starting a new job, you're trying to find your feet, you know.
100%.
And adapting to situations. Yeah. And also, you know,
I was living on my own for the first time and having to cook and do all that for myself.
Actually, I was going to ask you, were you obviously all living in the same presbytery?
In my diocese, it's very rare to live with another priest. I had a little house. It was lovely, little dormer bungalow. And living on my own.
How did you find that?
Do you know what? I loved it. Yeah. I think after 7 years of living with 80 other men and having to share bathrooms,
it was time to have. I was
ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. And PlayStations, TV.
I have one now.
Do you get any of that crack?
Yeah. I have one now.
Amazing.
Yeah. Actually,
so how many years did you spend in Port Leash?
I was 6 years in Port Leash.
Okay.
So last summer I moved and I am just shy of 2 weeks
out the road.
Yeah. Only out the road in Strab Valley. So smaller town, but I'm not the parish priest. I'm administrator of Strab Valley, which is basically the same thing. It's a canonical difference.
So is it like your second in command?
No, I am number one in command. Yeah. I just don't have the title as parish priest. I have the title of administrator.
Titles are overrated anyway.
Yeah. Because I like what you said, Nick. They've labeled me the PP of EP.
The PP of EP. See, the EP priest.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to EP, by the way?
And I'm actually singing at EP this year.
Of course you are.
Yeah, sure. Why not? No, I joined a male choir.
Deadly.
Part of my parish is Timahoe, and Timahoe have started a Timahoe male choir, and I joined it. I was at their very first meeting.
Very good.
Bunch of lads, we meet every Monday in a pub, we sing a few songs, and we've been asked to sing an EP. So, that's another thing.
Like you can go out to the pub.
Yeah.
You meet up with your friends.
Yeah.
You do all the normal things that people do. You're a human being.
Yeah. 100%. And I love it's a real bee in my bonnet when, you know, people don't allow a priest to be normal. Or they don't believe a priest can be a normal person. They just see the priest like I did. You know, before I ever spoke to Father Joe, I thought he was a real holy Joe. And I thought he's untouchable. And I thought you can't go near him. And he's not allowed to be normal.
And I think that's something that Ireland was guilty of for many a year. Like, priests were on pedestals, that they were untouchable.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not going to get into the history of the church and its failings, because we can't change the past.
No.
All we can do, as much as we want to. And, you know, there was hurts, there was letdowns, but as you said to me when you and I talked about this, you know, they're human. And there's some bad people out there in positions of power or positions, you know, of, you know,
authority,
like we saw it, authority, we saw it in education, we've seen it in the legal system, we saw it in the church. Yes, did the church should make mistakes? Yes. But I don't think we should be punished for the sins of our ancestors.
No.
That is the way I feel on it. And I suppose, like you, when I was a little bit different to you. I grew up with a very strict Irish Catholic mother. Mom, you don't listen to my podcast. Hopefully you don't listen to this one. Because I have a brief son, she probably will. But I love you, Mama. But Mommy was a strict parent. Like you, I was dragged to Mass. There was no choice. And I was made get down on those knees and say that rosary. I was made say that Angelus. I was made learn a lot of prayers very young. In some ways, I was probably exposed to too much religion at a young age. And it turned me completely against it. I was like, all these rules and the rigidness of it. And, you know, so... But then, Mama, this is where now you're going to like me again. And you know this story, David, and I'm not going to make much of this about me, but 6 years ago, my mum found a lump. And told nobody. And fecked off to Medjugorje, which I think was at the time her 10th trip to there at that stage. With the firstborn, the favourite kid, my sister Susan. And she came back from Medjugorje anyway, and me and her went down to Waterford for a couple of nights. And on the last night, she told me she found a lump. And I said, well, look, Mum, you need to get this checked out. And lo and behold, anyway, she had breast cancer. And I was like, Mom, when did you find this lump? And she goes, before I went to Medjugorje. And I was like, what? You went and you had a holiday. You enjoyed a holiday. Complete opposite of me. And she said, yeah. She said, I just brought the lump over to Our Lady. And I just gave it to her. And I said, look after me. And, you know, she went through the operation. She had radiotherapy. She's now, like, over the 5 years, completely in remission and fully cured, thank God. And watching her was a turning point in my faith because she was so bloody positive and tunnel vision. And giving this to God. And this is a woman who lost her sister to cancer, has lost a nephew to cancer, has anyone who's had cancer or close to her died. And it was the year before I was to get married. And I was like, my God, I won't have her. But she just was like, no, God has me. Our Lady has it. I took it to Medjugorje. We're fine. And I was like, do you know what? There's something in that.
It's attractive. That
peace. It flipping is attractive. And it got more and more attractive. COVID came. And I was like, yeah, we'll be okay. And I just found myself turning to God more and more and more, talking to him more. I never thought you could talk to God. Talk to Jesus. Just like Jesus, you know, I'm having a really tough day today. Whatever, X, Y, and Z. Right, come on, or Jesus, you know, I'm being tested today. You know, you're. And I was like, I'm talking to him as if he's my friend, my pal, and, you know, trying to just help me through things. And then I found I was thanking him for things. And now it's a part of my life. I get up every morning, I say my prayers, I say the Divine Mercy on the way into work, I say my rosary at night, and If I don't get to church on a Sunday, I will watch it online. I would feel a part of me is missing if I didn't pray every day.
And isn't it amazing that you didn't know you could talk to Jesus?
No.
Like, and you were brought up in a Catholic household.
100% did not know.
Yeah, that's prayer. You know, prayer is talking to Jesus, talking to God. And I think sometimes we think you have to do the Angelus, you have to do the Rosary, you have to do the Our Father, you have to say the prayers that we were taught in school or thought at home.
Like, remember you said to me one time, or when we were talking, that we were just saying the words.
Yeah.
Remember that you were like, we used to just say the words, we weren't taking it in.
Yeah, and just go through the motions, and we didn't really know what we were saying.
Yeah, and when you're older, not even older, when you get that awakening or that connection or you that light bulb moment, you feel it.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like even that day that I met you, I was like, God, mind me today now, because I'm a bit nervous now. This is a bit out of my comfort zone. And I was just like, help me remember, nothing can happen today that together you and I can't handle. And lo and behold, look who I met.
But you know what, because I walked into that room and, you know, it was full of people.
Full.
Full of people. And we were in that room all day long, you know.
All day. Yeah.
And I wasn't very comfortable in that space.
Yeah.
And then I sat down at your table and we got talking. And I thought, this one has it all together, you know. Yeah.
This isn't one. Funny how outward appearances.
It is, isn't it? Isn't
so
it?
Wrong. Yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing.
I just felt this peace, this instant peace from you. And because I was so quiet and shy for the first maybe hour.
Yeah, so was I.
Which then, as you know, after that you couldn't shut me up for the rest of the day. But I just got that instant peace from you. And I find anyone that I meet or talk to that is anyway a bit spiritual, I'm drawn to it. I can feel it. It's like this invisible, I can't, it's like an invisible like hug. It's just that you can just feel, yeah, that's a good soul there, and it feels good for my soul. And even if it turns out that I'm completely wrong, and this blind faith is nothing. It doesn't exist, which I don't believe. But how could it be bad when you're saying to a higher power, just help me, you know, always do good, mind my family, mind myself, give us peace, give us comfort when we're sad, celebrate the good with us. I just can't see why that is wrong. Let's forget all the politics. Forget about the Catholic Church, the scandals, the priest from the pulpit looking down at you. Let's just the relationship between you and God. How wouldn't you want to enjoy that?
Even if, you know, if you took away all the canon law and the catechism and the do's and the don'ts and what we believe, what we don't believe, boil it down. I am loved by God. You know, God has chosen me to be loved, to be his child, to be his beloved son and daughter. He has called me into a loving relationship with him. From that loving relationship, he wants me to go out and to practice love and to preach love and to be love in the world. Because he has no hands, no feet but ours.
I love that.
I just think, yeah, and then we get into the nitty gritty. Then we can, but if we start from there, or even if you're sitting, I said this last weekend in Stradbally, if you're sitting there, you don't know why you're here. You don't know what has brought you to church today. You don't know what's going on. You're here because it's an anniversary or because your wife or your husband or whoever has brought you along, your mother or father. You don't know why you're here. If you leave this church today knowing that God loves you, you know, you, Clodagh, God loves you. That's great. That's the only place to start. And then let's get into the conversation.
So simple.
But it's so simple, but it's extraordinary. Because yeah. It does take a leap of faith to believe in a God, you know? Like, because we can't see him, we can't touch him, we can't hold him, we can't.
And it's blind faith.
Yeah.
It is blind faith.
And he said that, and Thomas, poor Thomas, he doubted. And forever, he doubted that one time, and forever he's called Doubting Thomas. And he says, blessed.
And he'll probably forever be my favorite apostle because of that.
I love the apostles.
Because you can't get more human than that.
But I love the apostles because all but one apostle ran away when it got rough, you know? When he got arrested, he put up on the cross, they all ran away, bar one. And then they all came back and Thomas is like, hold on a second now, unless I see him, unless I put my finger into those holes, I am believing this. And then he did. Yeah. God gave him this great gift to be able to do it. And then God,
and you can appreciate that because you could see so many of us being Thomas.
Don't we all want to be able to do it? Don't we all want that, that lightning moment of God appearing to us and Jesus appearing to us and saying, you know what, God, it's okay. You know, it is all real. But Jesus said to Thomas, and I take great comfort in this. He said, blessed are you because you see and touch me and hear me. Blessed are those who do not see, do not touch, and still believe in me.
Yeah.
We're both the same. Whether we're the apostle 2,000 years ago or whether we're the apostles in 2024, you're called to a relationship with God. Yeah.
And if you had said to me 20 years ago that I would be having a conversation with a priest, calling him David, knowing that we met where we met,
It's not that dodgy.
I did make that sound dodgy. It really isn't actually dodgy.
Where we met. Yeah.
Where we met, with all those people.
In a room, no.
Oh my God. If you told me
20 years ago, when I was making my confirmation at the age of 12, that I'd be a priest.
That you'd be a priest.
I'd be like, go away from me, will you? Don't be denying me. You know?
I love that. Go away from me, will you? Yeah.
What are you smoking?
And I love that you said one of your pet peeves is people allowing priests to be human and have a normal life. Like you just saying there, you have the PlayStation. Do you know what I mean? And again, I'm young-ish. And to hear you say that is like, oh, cool, deadly. But my husband downstairs has a PlayStation. He's a factory worker.
Yeah.
I don't go, cool, he's a factory worker. Turn off that flipping thing. Yeah. I'm only joking. So I can understand you not wanting to be the face of the church, but you coming on this, and for some of you guys, you might know, technical issues, they seem to be just happening to me a lot lately. But David has informed me he's really good at technical stuff. So he's going to regret telling me that. But anyway, we were talking about the Benedictine crucifixes. Mm-hmm. It turns out we both have similar ones, which is amazing. My mum asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I said I'd love a real silver cross because I had one for years. I've always had an affinity for crosses long before I came back into the fold. And she just asked me, do you want one with or without Jesus? And I said, with, actually. So she got me this, and I was somewhere lately, and the girl was like, that's a nice cross, but why have you Jesus on it? And I was like, because I want to. And she's like, okay. Who else would be on it?
Yeah, exactly. Who else would you have on the cross?
Do you know, where did the cross come from?
Very true.
But I think it's conversations like these, David, that are the real chance of bringing people back to the faith.
Are you opening up their hearts and their souls and their minds?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to convert someone fully in a pub or a smoking area or, you know. But if one person says, you know, and it happens to me a lot, I could be in a pub or I could be somewhere. People get into DMCs with me.
Okay.
And I'm trying my best to, you know, to be, you know, as much as you can have a DMC about faith in a pub or in a public place. So you might say to them, listen, you know what, if you want to come back to me, we can, you know, we can have a coffee or something. But yeah, I think if you're just nice to the, if you're a person of faith, and if you're not nice, you know, that's a lot of damage you're doing. But if you're you're nice and open, like you said, you know, why wouldn't I have Jesus on my cross?
Yeah. You know?
Instead of saying, you know, because I'm a Catholic and, you know, you're going to hell because you're not. Obviously, the extreme.
I love that.
Obviously,
yeah,
the extreme.
That's true.
But just being nice and being yourself, and whether you're a priest or whether you're just a regular Catholic or whatever, you know, it's all we can do in these situations. And then someone says,
I like that you saying that, just even opening your heart to the possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Because someone might remember then, you know, God, I met that priest in the pub and, you know, we're having a conversation and he was very nice to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, I might, you know what, I might call him again, or I might, you know, I might go light that candle, or I might, you know, my mother is sick. I might ask him to say a prayer for me. And that might develop something, you know.
100%. And I don't like saying this, but I do like saying this. Priests do have an impact on people's, I suppose, persona of the church in a lot of ways. Like, I mean, my priest, Father Joe, or Joe, and everyone knows Joe Walsh, who's from Tipperary. Like, I remember the first time I introduced my husband to him. And oh, by the way, Joe was my chaplain when I was from first year on in school. And I knew back then, if I ever got married, it was him I wanted marrying me. And he's just so relatable. And me and him have had some incredible chats about life, about religion, about ups, downs. And he's so real, and he's such a genuine guy, and everyone who knows him loves him. Because he's just as down to earth as they come, and not preaching or forcing anything, just saying, hey, lads, do you know what? There's nothing wrong with a bit of an out of faith. But like, I remember when I introduced my husband to him, my husband was like, I was like, Connor, he's so sound. You're going to get on with him instantly. And he's like, yeah, sure, yeah. You know, and Connor was like, oh my gosh. And actually, our wedding, one of the most talked about parts of our wedding is the church. And that's rare. Because Father Joe was just fantastic. And, you know, there was people there who might be practicing Catholics, different religions.
Yeah.
And a lot of them took a lot away from Father Joe that day. And like you said, just open that mind that, yeah, maybe I might light that candle. Maybe I might, you know, say that prayer, you know. And I do think priests like yourself, like Joe, ye have a much bigger impact than you realize without trying to put that pressure on you. It's the modern priest. It's the relatable priest. It's the human priest that we can have these kind of chats. Yeah. And like, you know, remember you and I were talking about, I was just talking about the role priests have, you know, you have to like, you have to see some tough times.
Yeah.
You have to be there when people are, you know, taking their last breath or have passed away, comforting families, you know, with tragedies and everything and anything. And, you know, it's like your counselors, doctors, priests. There's like five roles put into one. And it's all, but you're also that presence of comfort to family, I think, in those situations.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And I think that is, again, without sounding big-headed, you know, I think we are that presence of God. You know, that we do, we do represent that other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good and bad, because some people who may be going through a bereavement or maybe having a difficult time might be very angry with God and then get angry with us. Fair enough.
And
some people just want to see us in those moments as well. They want to be reassured that their loved one who just died going to heaven, or wants to be reassured that if they're going through a treatment or if they're going through a difficult time, that there is light at the end of the tunnel and that things will get better and that there's someone looking after them. Loving them and wanting them.
100%. And then also we get to pointing out to me the media.
Yeah. Yeah, like...
Say what you said to me.
I think it's very Irish, but if something tragic happens in a town or a village in Ireland, they always go to the parish priest for the comment.
On the interview, on the news. On the news.
Yeah, there's always, and you know, and Father Joe, who was at the scene, said, you know, it's such a tragedy, you know, whatever, you know. And
why do you think that is, David?
I don't know, honestly. I do think there's that element to it. The priest can provide that reassurance and that level-headedness. And maybe the priest can also act as that voice of the community.
I think so.
Because, you know, it's the job of a pastor, it's the job of a priest, to get to know his sheep.
Yeah.
And to get to know the community. And to get to... And I didn't come up with it. Pope Francis says that a priest should have the smell of his sheep on him. You know, like a shepherd has the smell of the sheep.
I love that.
So that's what we're meant to do. And that's, we represent God, but at the same time, we're also representing our fold that we're representing. You know, when we go to heaven, please God, you know, I think one of the questions that would be asked to us, did you mind my sheep? Did you care for my flock? Did you bring me to them? And did you bring them to me?
That's such a privilege. That must be a nice feeling to know that.
Yeah. And
you can play a part in that.
Just to be reminded, I think sometimes you and your job, you get in the rhythm, you get in the, you know, the day-to-day stuff. And I can get into the day-to-day stuff, and a funeral and a baptism and a wedding, they're very run-of-the-mill to me now. But I have to remember, you know, at a funeral today, and remembering, you know, in this funeral, I'm praying for this person's soul, and hopefully I'm providing comfort to family who are grieving the loss of their father. Yeah. And I'm representing something that's more than just me. Same at the wedding, you know, I'm allowing this couple to get married to each other and bringing them before God and asking God to bless their marriage. I am that intermediary. I'm that in between. I'm that representative. That absolute privilege. And
I think that's what's incredible about you. It's the fact that you were the absolute epitome of the Irish child who's like, no, you're not dragging and kicking.
Kicking
and bribing
screaming.
You to mass.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes you even more relatable, David, to be honest. Never mind your age and your story, but the fact that you've been there, you know, and you organically found yourself, right, let's look into this. And, you know, the curiosity led to the love. And like you said, you've had relationships and you knew... I don't like saying the sacrifice. Like you hear a lot of people say, you wish the poor priest could get married.
I, you know what, people say, oh, sure, I'd love for you to get married. They never actually ask us, you know?
Is that what you'd want?
Yeah. The majority of priests, and again, sorry, the priests I've encountered, my friends, yes, we do have struggles. We do sometimes
like
love
anyone.
The happiest married couple has a struggle.
I think my husband would often think a life in the seminary would be a lot more peaceful than being married to me.
My parish priest in Port Leash used to say to us regularly, you know, lads, worst things in celibacy.
Yeah. A lot and worse. And, yeah.
And I love how people think that, you know, let priests get married. It will solve all the problems. We'll have men banging on the door wanting to get in to become priests. We'll be the land of 1,000 priests again. But that's not the case.
Everyone thinks that.
It's not the case.
Any conversation I'm ever in about, and I actually try not to get into conversations too much with people about faith.
Yeah.
I will just say, listen, I am.
You do you. I do me.
Yeah, I'm doing my thing, and I believe, and I'm practicing.
Yeah. If you want to know about that.
Yeah. Great.
Let's have that conversation.
Exactly. But like, I do think It is quite funny that if men can get married, they're just going to, there's going to be the storm on Maynooth that, like,
I don't think
you know, a stampede of...
Yeah, we're going to have to build an extension on the place.
Yeah, no, I just think that's naive. I think that people's view of Catholicism, of faith, of spirituality, they need to just be more open to it. And like I said, listen to people like yourself having these conversations and talking about a God that can bring you joy, happiness, comfort, peace, protection. Let's talk more about him. I think that will bring more people to... Yeah, there might be something in this.
To give it a go.
Yeah, and what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way I was. Like you said, a lot of people get angry when someone dies. Well, I've definitely encountered where, how did God do this? Why would they, you know?
Exactly.
And I've often heard people say,
natural.
Oh, I prayed until I lost so-and-so. And after that, no. Funnily enough, when Mammy got the cancer, and as I said, I wasn't practicing at the time. There was none of that in me. None of that. If anything, watching her be so strong made me turn into God more.
That's fantastic.
You know, and look, there's always a fall guy, isn't there? People like to have a fall guy, you know, blame someone. That's human nature, I suppose. Yeah, exactly. So I like to think that God... Being in my life, and I suppose my faith is probably very strong with Jesus. I feel very close to Jesus. I feel like he's my pal. He's got me. I feel like he's making me a nicer person. And making me a person that's more aware of my own flaws and my own faults. And accepting that I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea. That's okay as long as I'm his. You know?
100%.
I could talk to you all day.
I know. We nearly have.
Any chance of EP tickets? No.
you are not the first person today to ask me for EP tickets.
I have no doubt.
I don't know.
No, I think that's amazing. You're performing at EP. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Make sure someone gets that recorded.
Yeah, come see us. I think 2:30 at the Hazelwood stage, I think.
What day?
Sunday.
You're on Sunday. Makes sense. Are you dodging Mass that day?
I will be saying Mass that day. I'm in that choir. There's guards in that choir. There's prison officers. There's loads of farmers. It's very eclectic.
I love that. And music brings the world together in my eyes. I have a tattoo on my shoulder blade that says, when words fail, music speaks.
100%.
So I think it's just the universal...
Language of peace and love and life.
I, like I said, I could talk to you all day. I think you should come back again after EP and we continue this. Because, like I said, I'd love people to hear you more. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this. You know, some people might listen and go, yeah. Whatever. But if one person listens and goes, well, just there might be something to that, lads. And they end up saying the ancient guardian prayer that night. Well, then we've done okay.
Yeah, or go to mass that Sunday and
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully, they have a nice experience. Yeah,
exactly. David, thanks so much for giving your time to, and for coming on, because I know you don't really like doing this. I do really appreciate you for trusting me to have you on and to have a lovely little chat.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, you mind yourself, and we'll be in touch. I'll be up to Stradbally soon.
Welcome anytime.
You're a good cook, you were saying.
No, I can cook.
No, I heard good cook. No. So yeah, I'll be expecting something now when I come up. Not just like a cup of tea and sandwiches.
I'll bring you out.
Cheers. Well, listen, you mind yourself.
You too.
And we'll chat soon.
God bless. Thank
you. So, guys, that's it for another episode of the Nothing to Do With You podcast. I'm sure you can all see why I was really looking forward to having David on. If we're ever able to share how we actually got to meet, I kind of blackmailed him into this because he owed me one. That's all I can really say, you know? So, look, we'll leave it at that. Guys, wherever you are, I hope you're being good to yourselves, you're being kind to yourselves, and you're just enjoying the little things. And if you're having a difficult time at the moment, that's okay. These things pass. They always do, like a wave. It's been one of the biggest learning curves for me in the last couple of years. So you just be kind to you, and always remember, there's always an ear nearby wanting to listen to you. So you mind yourselves and always be sound. Take care, guys.